Are you ready? Feeling good?
I'm feeling great.
I'm feeling good.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Chaotic Music Meetings. This is a pre-recorded episode, so we're just hanging out in Studio B at CITR. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, situated on the traditional unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Today, I have Gil Galetsky and Neetu Dah, both friends of the show.
Friends of only the show, not Miles.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a real blow.
I always aim for the gut.
That's the voice of Gil Galetsky, aiming from the gut. Wait, did you say from the gut or for the gut?
Well, I was aiming for your gut.
Right.
My voice usually comes from, I have a sort of nasally voice, usually, I've been told.
So it's probably, from the nose here. To
yeah.
The gut.
From the nose to the gut.
So
to your ears.
And right next to Gil, sharing the mic, is Neetu Dah.
Hello, everybody. Please pronounce my name correctly.
And please call Neetu's show Cece.
Yes.
Rather than Convictions and Contradictions, which is
yes.
Its like official name.
I'm trying to get it to catch on to people to call it Cece.
Cece.
Yes.
And you're like, give me a dose. Give me a dose of the CC. Or no, CC is a dose, right? Like when they give you medicine?
Yeah, like give me 50
CCs.
I was actually, the kind of the catchphrase of my show is that CC, the only radio show to ever be subtitled, ironically.
Whoa.
I was thinking about it that way. But I like that.
Oh, CC as in like closed captions.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that too. Wow,
there's
so many things you can
so
play in this thing.
To it.
Yeah.
The only radio show with closed captions is like saying like when people are mean and they're like, you have a face for radio or something. It's like you have to think about it. You know? I don't know.
I've worked in radio for almost a year now and no one's ever said that to me, like, you have a face for radio.
That's because you're a beautiful boy.
Oh.
And they would never say that to you.
Damn, who has really set eyes up. That change color?
Wow.
He does. I asked him all
I
about it once.
I believe it.
I've been keeping
people.
Track.
Yeah.
Today they're blue.
Yeah, they go through the rainbow. Sometimes they're red. Sometimes they're
when you're
violet.
When you're Super Saiyan.
if you don't know anything at all, Neetu Dah has a show called CC, which is a radio show on CITR.
Yes.
I don't think we mentioned that. Every second Thursday at 8 a.m. I'm a big fan. Neetu's been on this show two times now. This is your third appearance.
It is. You've been on my show four times, so
yeah.
You still owe me one more appearance on your show.
I love that
I'm keeping count. I'm keeping track of all of your movements. I keep track of your eye color. I keep track of your clothing. I keep track of if you add any more patches to that jacket you have.
Yeah. Well, I've always said that white men in positions of power and privilege should be constantly interrogated and shouldn't shy away from it.
You should be tagged like an endangered animal so you can like make sure that you're like healthy and
I'm doing my part for the society. I'm keeping track of a white man. I'm a bitch of me woman.
Thank you, Neetu. You're doing great work. Where do we go from that?
I like talking about Miles as if he's like a feral being.
Well, what about it?
I don't know. I think there's a grain of truth to it.
Yeah.
I've seen you wilding out.
Oh, wow.
And screeching.
I don't think I have. I've only interacted with you here at the station.
Yeah, that's right.
I've never met with you anywhere outside of the station.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is weird.
He's a madman. No, I'm just kidding.
I wonder what you're like outside the station.
Yeah, and like I think mainly we haven't hung out outside the station because I divide my time exclusively between CITR and going to shows.
Yes.
And you infamously do not go to rock shows.
I've never been to a rock show.
Don't,
I've never
don't start.
Been to a concert. I've never been to like any kind of like mass event. Never. Not even like a hockey game or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe high school sports but I was on the team.
Right.
So I don't really, but now it's in elementary school, so that doesn't really count.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll get to it at some point? Like, is this something you want to do ever, or you just have no interest?
I don't know. I think I'd like to go. I'd like to, like, know what it's all about. Like, you know, you see it on TV, YouTube, every now and then, like, a bunch of people getting together just rocking out to music. And I wonder what it's like. But I'd like to know what it's like. I think that's what it is. But
yeah.
I think not really. I don't think I'd get into it unless I liked it.
Yeah.
I think it's very different from how the way you see it on TV and in movies.
Yeah,
definitely.
That always goes through my head. I'm sure it's different than what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
In movies, it's always like there's a red light on and a blue light and a purple light and that's a club.
Well, and also it always shows it like concert footage. You obviously there's different cameras and angles and stuff like that, and always shows you from a position that's like physically impossible to get from the audience,
because
you're sort of like this floating eye over the stage.
Yeah, it's like here's how ghosts see clubs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But in reality, I'm going to the Janelle Monáe concert and I'm a 5'5" person and there's like 8 different 6 foot plus people standing in front of me and I can't see my beautiful queen Janelle Monáe because she's like shorter than I am.
And
there's lots of sweaty people.
Yeah.
And people with their phones out.
I'm always
Minecraft.
I'm always one of those sweaty people. I sweat a lot.
I sweat a lot, too.
I'm always wondering, how do you socialize? Or do you even socialize with people? Do you just like, okay, I'm here to see a concert. You're here to see it, too. But we're not going to, like, talk or anything. Like, we're not going to, like, jump together and, like, dance together. We're just going to do our own thing, but in the same area.
It took me years to figure that out.
Yeah, I don't think there's actually a general consensus on what you're supposed to do. I think a lot of people have different ideas of it, and that's why there's, like, you know, people get into fights or something at, like, rowdy concerts because there'll be, like, a couple kissing or something, and somebody gets mad at them or,
yeah.
I don't know, somebody's dancing too wild. And then, yeah, I don't know. So it's a mystery.
Maybe that's what's keeping me away. That mystery of it all.
Yeah, I don't like crowds, so I don't like to, like, if there's a concert, like a bigger concert with a bigger act and it's at the Vogue or something, I want to sit in a seat.
Mm-hmm.
I want my own assigned spot. I don't like standing, and I don't like, I mean, when you're sitting, it's kind of like you're amongst a crowd, but it doesn't feel as much like you're in a crowd as when you're doing, like, the general admittance on the floor. I don't like that.
It's like when you go to a movie theater.
Yeah, exactly. And I just love sitting. Because then it's like, you can also stand if you want to, but it's optional.
See, Nita, you told me once that you did you worked the door for the Toast Collective
right,
for
yes,
a show.
I think
that's the perfect way to get into shows, is to start with a place like the Toast that's small and has couches.
Yeah, and the door is like the door place where you pay is in a completely different room than the music. So you can be as like disconnected as you want.
Yeah, but when I was at the door, I kind of wanted to go in and see what it was all about. But I liked being at the door because it was just kind of fun to talk to people and just kind of converse that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like one of my favorite parts of shows is actually like the door and like how lovely it is greeting people that way. Like it seems like it can be a nice like hangout spot, just hanging out by the door.
Yeah. Shows.
Yeah. But I would greet people in a weird way sometimes, because I think I mentioned this to you before. When people came in, I was supposed to give them a stamp, and it was a dinosaur stamp.
Right.
And if they were to leave and come back, they had to show me the stamp to say, like, oh, I've already been in.
Show me your dinosaur.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Show me your dinosaur. And whenever I would say that, I thought, this is such a sexual question in my head.
Show me your extinct, ancient fossil.
Show me your giant beast.
Yeah.
Let's play a track.
Yeah,
let's get on track. Today's episode is going to be all about instrumental music, partly because that's what Nitu specializes in on her show, Cece, playing exclusively instrumental music. And partly because Gil Galetsky is also known as Shitlord Fuckerman, who has a lot of instrumental tracks that we have played on the show.
Yes.
Confirming.
The both of you are like into instrumental music and into visual art. So we might get to talk about that. Might get to talk about the animation collective Flavor Cell that Gil is in. But for starters, Neetu, can we play one of your tracks?
Yes, please do.
Okay. Did we decide which one we were going to start with?
We didn't say, but let's go with the Ram Horns.
Oh,
I'm most
wait.
Anxious to hear that one again.
Okay, so this is by The Flowers of Hell.
From their album Symphony No. 1.
And the track is called Ram's Horn Call. Ooh, that was a short one, but it was beautiful. That was Ram's Horn Call. Wait, Ram's Horn Call or Ram's Horns Call?
I think it's the latter.
Single horn.
Yeah, Ram's Horn Call by the Flowers of Hell, Symphony No. 1.
That's such a good name for a ensemble.
Yeah. Where did you find out about them, Neetu?
I think it was Andy, the previous music director, or maybe mm-hmm. it was you. I ask every.
No, I've never heard of them.
Then it's probably Andy, the previous music director, because instrumental music isn't really you can't really search in it for it in our search engine here at the station.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually ask the music director, could if you find some new instrumental music, and you know you like it, or it's just new and you've approved it. Could just email it to me. Just send it to me. It's yeah. the same system I have with you. You just yeah. send me stuff, and that's how I found them.
Yeah, cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Good one. Shout out to Andy Resta.
Yes.
And I think that's how we met, is you coming by my office asking if I could tell you what new instrumental
yeah,
tracks had come
I
in.
Yeah, I came in to set up the system with you also. But also, yeah. I just wanted to meet you. We were going through a bunch of new staff changes. I wanted to meet you, and we just hit it off.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
That's cool.
It's such a short track, but it's like it's so like full of feeling. Mm-hmm. And anytime there's like a horn track, I feel like you're instantly like kind of swept up in it.
Yeah, my mom gets really emotional by horns.
Yeah.
Or like bagpipes.
Yeah, they're always like traditionally they're used for very like emotional times.
Yeah,
totally.
It always reminds me of like traditional things too. Mm-hmm. It always reminds me of like prehistoric times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling.
Yeah,
to get away from like modern urbanization a little bit.
Yeah, it must be like the horn, especially like a ram's horn.
Mm-hmm.
Must be one of the oldest instruments that was like used.
Yeah, likely. Yeah. It makes me, I don't know, it's so like any kind of horn, because it's all about blowing, I don't know, maybe this is a bit too galaxy brain, but because it's like you're blowing air through an instrument and it's all about just like the embouchure of the hole that you're blowing through, it always just sounds like you're in a huge open space
mm-hmm.
all the time, and just, or like wherever they recorded the ram's horn just sounds like. Sounds like huge.
Yeah, like a wide open field.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, that would have been where they were like used.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
And it's so cool to think about like the difference of tones between horns, because, I mean, every horn is a you know an animal part mm-hmm. that from a different animal that's going to have like minutely different this like surface. Structure, like, what am I saying?
Yeah, no, I understand. Yes,
yeah.
Like every ram horn must sound slightly different,
mm-hmm. right? Yeah, and yeah, the craftsmanship that goes into making it sound like a note at all.
What is there any craftsmanship? Because I just imagine you like taking a horn off a.
Well, they're not hollow, are they? Or I guess they probably have like. I don't know how horns work.
Not that I think of it, I don't either.
Wow.
Because I thought you could just, like, snap it off
and it was a horn.
I don't
think that's how that works.
I don't don't think it's like certain shells that you find on the beach.
Yeah,
you blow into it. Yeah. I think they actually they have to do something to it.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there might be some carving involved. And
right.
There's either it's horn all the way through, or there's like some nerves in there. The more I start thinking about this, the less, like, the dumber I realize.
The more we talk about it, the more I realize I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you better edit this part out.
I think we might have to make the title of this episode Horn All the Way Through.
It's horn all the way down. But I do like the idea of the craftsmanship behind the instrument, even if it is really simple. And the fact that, likely, I'm assuming, a horn, a ram's horn was used for a purpose, to get people's attention or mm-hmm. to be some sort of signal or something. I like the idea of the intersection of, functionality of music and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I find that really interesting because I don't really like when people separate art from, crafting, because making a vase or something, I don't know, something like that, it's like there's a fine line between where it's like a sculpture or if it's like a household object mm-hmm. or something like that. But I think it's all cool that it's art, because every piece of art has a function.
Yeah, and the function that I think of immediately when I think about horns is long distance communication.
Yeah.
The first
text.
Well, it's it's one of the first things that humans probably found that was so loud
right.
that they could communicate with it across distances that their voices couldn't carry across. Mm. But also, another part of me thinks I know from studying music history that that music and singing was developed before even speech, before even language. Mm. That there was sort of artistic expressionism before there was communication.
Right.
So I wonder if horns were used just for the beautiful sound they make mm-hmm. before they were even used for communication.
Yeah.
Possibly. Maybe for rituals or dances or mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that it's a ram's horn, and the band is called the Flowers of Hell mm-hmm. because rams are very associated
right.
with the devil.
Yeah. This is a bit off topic, but I wonder what it was like to hear somebody just yell for the first time. How scary that must have been.
Yeah.
If somebody's just it's just oh my God, you made that sound? How'd you do that?
But haven't you seen babies do that? Where they suddenly realize that they have volume or they
right.
can control their volume?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I guess that's true, baby. I didn't think about the fact that babies just screech, so probably that was a pretty early one. yelling.
But you're talking about the first human to ever yell.
Yeah. just nobody thought about just the concept of putting force behind or projecting your voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not it wasn't a thing yet.
Well, and it has to develop in everyone. You have to, those are certain muscles you're using to project.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't come out of the gate using them.
Yeah,
right.
It's
so
not
maybe
that. It's
maybe
not really intuitive. So I'm sorry, I'm speaking over you.
No, that's okay.
It's not really intuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
Maybe we haven't been able to scream maybe we had to evolve into screaming.
Yeah, but do you think we had to wait until there was a time when we were in danger and had
yeah.
to scream?
Or like,
I love this idea.
Yeah, maybe ancient babies, they just came out and they're like,
Now I want to call
they're not screaming.
Now I want to call this episode Ancient Babies.
Ancient Babies, the legend of the horn. Wow, we're getting very anthropological, and I have no credentials to back up anything.
I've exhausted my horn material.
Yeah, I took one music anthropology course in my first year of university, and then I promptly dropped out. So.
Right. I think I took also one class in anthropology. It was all about human bones and Homo erectus and all
yeah.
those old species and whatnot.
Bone horn.
I wonder.
I wonder. Mm. Bone flute. Sorry.
I want to play another of Nitu's tracks. We've got one queued up called Harmonica Blues.
It's one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah. And actually, you brought this to for one of the other shows that we were recording, and we just never got to it.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. What do you like about this track?
I love the sound of the harmonica. It's just, you know, there's all the different instruments, piano, and obviously ancient instruments, or instruments even that we use in the Punjabi culture. But there's something about the harmonica that always kind of just struck me, that I always just liked the sound of it. And I can pinpoint when that started. It was in my childhood where, like some of us, I was a big fan of Digimon as a kid.
Nice.
Show. And there was a specific episode where they were like around like this campfire, and one of them, his name was Bat, was playing the harmonica, and I just love the sound of it.
I just love how much Gil is smiling.
That's such a good origin story for how you got into the harmonica.
That's exactly how. I just like the sound, and ever since then I was always kind of, you know, you kind of just seek it out afterwards.
Yeah.
Is that a harmonica? That kind of a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think harmonicas get a bad rap a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I think people think they're cheesy or something. Like, like, yeah. I'm thinking of the part in, like, Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder. Oh, my God. Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder, where he just does, like, a five-minute harmonica solo. And it's like, okay, wrap it up, you know? But I really love, like blues harmonica, like Delta blues harmonica.
Oh, yeah.
So cool. Like, people who have mastered how to play the harmonica. I got, like, sort of into the idea of trying to play a harmonica when I was like 17, and I obviously did not do a very good job.
So did I.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
Know
oh my God.
We're all aspiring harmonica players.
I watched some tutorials and.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I don't think I even got that far into it.
It was at the point when I was living in Powell River with this old lady going to the sort of film school, and I'm sure she did not enjoy me like trying to do like train like harmonica sounds like.
I think I didn't start with tutorials. I started with finding the harmonica.
Yeah.
I started finding like prices where I could get it. Could I convince my parents to get it? Like, this won't be annoying to you at all. You're actually gonna like this sound in the house.
Yeah.
Who's the artist of this track?
I unfortunately don't know.
Oh, right.
Because we have a lot of kind of random records here at the station which are just like sound effects, and I found it on one of them.
Right.
And I've tried to relocate it, but I failed.
Yeah.
I can't find it. It was actually in this studio. I found it for the first time. I liked it. But then I came back to record it so I could play it on a show eventually, hopefully my show. I haven't played it there yet. So I came back and found it. But then I was looking for it again because there was another track on there that I liked, but I couldn't find it.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, if you're out there and you recognize and you're like, I played that track, you should call me too.
Yes, let me know.
Yeah, please let us all know. Okay, well, here we go. Nitu exclusive from the CITR archives, Harmonica Blues. That was Harmonica Blues, Artist Unknown. And again, if you're listening to this and you know who that artist is, please let CITR know. Oh, I really like that.
Yeah, I love the pitch bending. And yeah, just it's just all harmonica, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool. You can really hear like the range of sounds.
Mm.
And it... I hope you pictured us all sitting around a campfire while
eating grits.
Yeah. I always like to imagine that whenever I hear this song, that I'm like around a campfire or something like that.
Just a lonesome cowboy.
Yes.
I think what I love the most about the harmonica is it's really close to the human voice, I think. Mm. Like, obviously it doesn't sound like the human voice, but it's so close to it and, like, physically, mm-hmm. I think. And a little bit tonally, so much though that, like, I'm thinking specifically, like, Sonny Terry is a harmonica player, really, like, crazy blues harmonica player, and he would, like, do, like, hoots through his mm-hmm. harmonica, and it would sound like it would go through the reeds of the harmonica. I don't really know sure. the nomenclature, and it would sound like part of the instrument, almost.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like how you can both manipulate it with your mouth, but also you can sort of sing through it as well and use your voice as an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think more people should play harmonica in their Vancouver bands.
Yeah.
I wish I knew more about, like I don't know much about music. I don't know what the difference between, like, a pitch is, say, between, like, I don't know, what's another term? Oh. I don't even know another term.
That's okay.
Yeah. I really don't know any of that, like, kind of technical stuff about music or, like, musical notes or anything like that. I always kind of determine music by the sound. Like, do I like the sound? How mm-hmm. does it make me feel?
Yeah. Well, that's how I do it, too.
I think that's a perfectly valid way to listen to music. I think it's almost more interesting, like, the way people talk about music when they don't know anything about it
mm-hmm.
or like don't have any of like the quote unquote technical knowledge, whatever that means, because like I mean in this case a lot of that knowledge is like, at least that I know, is deeply rooted in just Western music knowledge, which
mm-hmm.
is
mm-hmm.
completely arbitrary, like looking at music from all around the world. So yeah
and if you've studied music theory, then you've like learnt the language of music theory, and it means that it's going to be harder for you to talk to people who haven't also learned that language.
I should probably like be a little bit more conscious of that though, because I'm not very good at music theory. I think I'm definitely more of a like a ear, like listening to things by ear person. Mm-hmm. But
what is music theory? I have no idea what that is.
I guess it's like learning the note names of notes and names of chords and how they interact with each other. And it's like everything, like, you know, learning how to read sheet music, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all just theory. Like, it's not real, you know?
Right.
Like, somebody a while ago decided that there's only X amount of notes in a scale and they all sound exactly this, like, you know, they sound the same no matter on what instrument you play them on, and there's nothing in between them, which there obviously are notes
mm-hmm.
in between, so it's all just somebody just made it up.
Yeah, when we talk about music theory and using English words like music and theory,
yeah,
we're talking about a very like it's not very specific. It's really just like the dominant way of talking about music, like the most used.
Like,
so it's
the narrative you would use to speak about it, like the
technical terms you would use to describe what's happening in music.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like another language, I guess.
Mm-hmm. The language of music.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. it's just like it's one language of music, I guess, because there's definitely lots of different languages of music that I don't know anything about.
I imagine my culture has a different language of music, because we have our own specific instruments. Like, if you've ever been to a Gurdwara, or if you've ever been to the Vaisakhi Parade here in Vancouver, or possibly Surrey, you've probably seen them before. I have no idea what they're called. I really don't. I never really learned that kind of stuff growing up. My parents never taught me. But I just know, like, there's one where it's kind of like a bagpipe, and that you move something in and out, and then connected to it is like a keyboard.
Oh, is that a harmonium or something? It's probably a different name for it, but I think I know. I think I've seen one of those before. They sound really cool.
It's like you have to sit with them. It's in front of you. It's kind of like a big box.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Then yeah.
I think I've seen one of those before. I don't know the.
That's
the
one of many.
Name for it.
Neither do I.
Yeah,
right. And if you'd used the proper name for it, we wouldn't have known what you were talking
probably
about.
Probably not.
It's much more helpful for us for you to just take a stab at describing it.
Yeah. Yeah, those are, cool.
I do like, I like what you were saying, Gil, about how the harmonica being so close to the human voice.
Yeah.
And how when you're using it, you are using your voice as well, and sending your voice through something.
Mm-hmm.
And altering the tone that way. A lot of, like, I think what I really liked about the harmonica when I was a kid is just that, like, it was so easy to make sounds that I couldn't make on my own.
Right.
Like,
right.
You can just blow through it, and you don't have to have the proper technique to just make a sound that's totally unlike anything your voice can make.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a whine to it, and it's almost, like, aching, and it just feels like... Like I felt like there were some sounds that I wanted to get out as a kid that
right.
I couldn't,
yeah.
and instruments were a way of helping that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's definitely easier to make a more pleasant sound out of a harmonica than it is to say, I don't know, like a clarinet, because
right.
there's sort of a technique. There's like
right.
much more technique in learning how to use the reed and stuff. Like I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, it's a very accessible instrument.
I always like the idea of how small it is and how portable it
yeah.
is,
mm-hmm.
how easy it is to, like, play music anywhere. Whereas, like, I think it was grade 7, I was, like, we always had, like, a music class. When you got to grade 7, you got to choose, like, do you want to play in band? And I said yes. And I ended up with a saxophone. So I kind of knew about the reeds and whatnot, but it was so hard to carry.
Yeah.
Because my house, it wasn't too far, but I had to walk up a hill. It was in this giant case. It was just so difficult to bring.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I was when I was in maybe 10, so maybe grade 5. We had like a little like concert band thing where we'd go over to the high school next door and learn how to play instruments. And I had a trumpet, and I was like a really, really small 10-year-old, and I was so bad at carrying that case. It was the worst. It was so heavy, even though trumpets are pretty small. But I was like, you know, like 4'5" maybe, and like 50 pounds or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
I'm just looking at the time, and I think it's time for Neetu to take off.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
I unfortunately have to leave.
Yeah.
On purpose. Not that I want to leave. I'd rather continue the conversation.
And I'm sure we will continue this conversation at some point. But Neetu, thank you so much for being here and sharing your tracks.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me come on. You still owe me one more show.
Don't you forget.
She's
going to come find you.
I know exactly where you are.
The 8th and concluding chapter.
It's going to be a fight to the death.
We'll have a sequel. We'll continue on.
Right. Season 2.
Right.
It was lovely to meet you.
It was nice to meet you too, yeah. Gil.
Until next time.
Lovely
yes.
on-air handshake.
On-air handshake.
Cool. Well, I'm going to play some ads, and we'll be back in a minute. Cool.
Goodbye, everybody.
I need to.
So you're a member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts in Hastings Sunrise at
Beat Street Records, Bomber Brewing, Community Vintage and Thrift, Community Thrift and Vintage, Pandora's Box Rehearsal Studios, Red Cat Records, and Selectors Records. The Vancouver International Women in Film Festival is back for its 14th celebration of cinema created by women from around the world. Running from March 5th to 10th at Viv Van City Theatres, the festival offers a variety of programming for filmmakers and the community alike. Go for the film screenings and stay for the parties, panels, discussions, workshops, artist talks, and more. Tickets are on sale now. Visit womeninfilm.ca for full details. Thank you.
That was the song Walking Color by duo Bernardek Zagraja. It's a Polish jazz duo that I barely know anything about.
I loved it.
It's from I believe it's from 1981. Mm. I found it on this YouTube channel called like Funked Up East or something like that. Like a really terrible name or something.
But that wasn't the name of like any of the
none of the people involved, just somebody.
It wasn't a compilation, it was just a YouTube channel.
No, it's like a YouTube channel of some person runs it, and they have the world's largest collection of like weird Soviet-era jazz fusion, sort of psychedelic and early electronic records, mm-hmm. and they've compiled them all. I guess they've recorded, they've done like vinyl rips, and mm-hmm. they've uploaded them onto this channel. And I found it a couple weeks ago, and I've just been obsessed with it. Like every single record I've listened to on it has been like crazy good. Mm-hmm. That like yeah, some things have been really early electronic stuff. Some stuff more like almost disco. And as somebody that's been, I have like a weird obsession with Polish. It's called Disco Polo, and it was supposed to be a response to Italo disco, which was very popular in the 80s, just Italian disco music. Mm-hmm. But the Disco Polo response to it is, I don't want to do a dig on my Polish brethren, but it's less than good. It's kind of like karaoke disco backing tracks.
Okay.
And so this whole time I was like, man, I wish there was good, like, hot, like, Polish disco tracks. And this channel's got it.
Yeah.
They've got the good stuff in there.
I love thinking about it as a response to Italian
disco. It is, yeah.
Because it sounds like that's like them saying, like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This needs a good Polish spin on it. They do love dance music there, so mm-hmm. anytime there's a dance music craze, there's always a Polish response to it. Actually, you know the Numa Numa song, that classic meme from like 2007?
Do I?
When I was in Poland, the last day I had in Poland, I was driving to, or being driven to the airport in a shuttle in Krakow. And the original Romanian Numa Numa song came on. It has a different name. It has a Romanian name. But it came on the radio, and I was like, nice. Like, this is cool. This is yeah. the authentic experience.
That's legit.
I'll never forget it that day. But yeah, anyway, this channel is incredible. I'd highly recommend checking it out if you like the idea of listening to jazz fusion that isn't from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah.
Wait, what was the name of that playlist?
It's like a channel on YouTube, and it's called Funked Up East.
Great. check it out.
I don't know, I like it a lot. I went to jazz school when I was 18 for a semester, and I dropped out because I really hated it, and the whole experience that I had, it was just a really bad year of my life, made mm-hmm. me sort of have this disdain towards listening to jazz music, not because I disliked it, but just because it reminded me of being 18 and feeling sort of lost.
Mm-hmm.
And just listening to that, some of the stuff on that channel, I was like, wow, this is like really good. Like,
yeah.
I unlocked jazz again.
Oh, great.
And I can enjoy it.
I have a lot of friends who went through like jazz programs mm-hmm. or like went to university to study jazz theory and came back from it like, oh, that was too much jazz.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do it for a while.
I know, yeah. That was my experience. And like, I have no ill will towards any of the people that I was in classes with, but anytime I hung out with some of the people outside of class time, it's like all they talked about was jazz, and I was
right.
like, I'm gonna die. I just want to talk about something else. Can we talk about like Evil
thing.
Dead or something? It is a very university thing. Yeah,
I'm really glad that you eventually found like-minded people who appreciate jazz and D&D.
Yeah, or like, and I'm sure the people I was hanging out with liked other things. It was just sort of like the stage of our lives that we were in, like early university, and all you want to do is just talk about your studies.
Well, that's what university does to you. It's intense study.
Yeah.
And for a while, you can't talk about anything else.
Yeah,
I mean, nobody.
Yeah, and that's true for when I later on went to Emily Carr and studied animation. Like, all my friends that I made there, like, all we would talk about is animation for a long time. But I guess the difference is that I'm like intensely obsessed with animation to the point where I'm just like, I just love talking about it and like the ideas behind it and the history of it. Like, I love every part of that. But I guess something about specifically jazz just didn't click with my baby brain at the time.
And you do, like, as we mentioned, you're part of this collective called Flavor Cell.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of events that are sort of like integrating animation into live music events, or vice versa, like creating animations that use local tracks.
Yeah.
When you're putting something together, like say you're making an animation, like you're making your own video.
Mm.
And you want a track for it, what kind of stuff are you usually looking for?
I don't know. I mean, usually I guess I don't usually actually animate a whole lot to music unless I'm doing something specifically for a musician or if it's like a longer thing. I do a lot of shorter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I do often, like, I usually will listen to music while I'm animating, and that'll often, like, I think, inform how I approach certain things, because I don't really, like, I guess I was saying that, like, I dropped out of jazz school and then I went and studied animation and that was a lot better, but I really don't treat the two things like that differently. Like, I approach music and animating the same way. And I don't really differentiate between them. So maybe it was more of the teaching of music that didn't gel with me.
Right.
Whereas I feel like the teaching of something is, I think, like visual art is sometimes considered to be more subjective than music.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I think there's, especially in jazz, there's like almost an objective quality to what's good jazz and what isn't, or what is like adhering to the rules properly of jazz.
Right. I guess it's a more like, what's the word, sort of like ingrained art form.
Yeah.
Like it's, jazz has been studied
for
a lot longer than animation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, they're approximately the same age, honestly,
I
like
guess,
the popular forms.
It, yeah.
Yeah. But it's not until recently that like animation history has been a thing. I think maybe just the study of jazz, because there was already music theory before jazz, maybe that's why it's...
Right, like even though like jazz, the way we know it today, is kind of like a 20th century.
That classic 1800s jazz.
Yeah, it's relatively recent, although like music theory has been around for hundreds, maybe thousands of years.
Probably in some form, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas animation has much more of a sense of like, this is... I don't know what I'm saying. It's newer, historically speaking.
Right, and it went hand in hand with like the advent of like film and stuff like that. Like, I used to know what the first official animation, like what date it was in, what it was called, but I don't remember anymore. But it was like, you know, probably it was in the early 1900s, like 1901 or something like that.
Yeah, the first flip book.
Yeah, it was like literally a flip book. I think it's like a film. There's like a guy. This wasn't even. I'm not even talking about the question you asked me originally.
That's fine.
But I think the first official what is called the first animation, is like a picture. It's like a picture. I guess it was called the picture. Then it's a film. It's like this guy, and he's just like drawing a face, and then the face, like, it's like stop motion, the face like changes facial expressions, or like suddenly has like a cigar in its mouth, or and is like smoking. It's like very like early 1900s sort of gag. I think they used to call them trick films, because they were sort of closely, they would do a lot of movies about that would feature like magicians doing sort of these tricks of the eye, but they would use early like editing techniques to make them like look like, you know, they'll do a jump cut and it's like, oh, the woman disappeared.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, even the very action of just like an image appearing or disappearing had never been really seen before.
Right. It's like it's probably like an Asimov quote where it's like, you know, like advanced technology to somebody not like to people that aren't as advanced as indistinguishable from magic or whatever, mm-hmm. like,
which kind of ties into what Neetu and I were talking on our last show about how all music can just sound like noise the first time you hear it.
Yeah.
And I've already lost my train of thought with that.
Oh, but like music just sounds like nothing sometimes, and then.
Well, like I think you only recognize music if you've heard something similar before. So if you hear a new genre that you've just never heard of before, you might not even call it music, and it would just sound like noise to you.
Yeah, that's true.
Similarly, like the first animation must have seemed like magic to a lot of people who had just never experienced.
Right.
That.
And even the simplest of animated images was probably just like, oh my god, how?
Yeah.
Like
the trickery of it.
I mean, like, I didn't fully understand how things were animated when I was, like, I don't know, 10 even. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't understand that it was people drawing every single frame. I thought there was some other, there's something else going on, because I was like, there aren't people.
It can't be like dozens of people working for very low pay.
Yeah, surely.
They wouldn't take advantage of that many.
Yeah, oh my god.
Animators.
You're gonna make me cry.
Sorry.
But yeah, I think there's I've had the same experience with music though, like being going back to the, like hearing something new and then being like, eh, it's noise to me, or not necessarily noise, but there's a lot of bands, I guess, or even genres that I've listened to maybe, or I've heard in passing as a kid and been like, yeah, no, not for me. And then later I've come back to it and then something like a switch has been flipped in my brain, or like a door has been unlocked, and in there is the ability to love listening to Al Green something.
Yeah.
Like, or like one of them was that I remember a lot. It was my mom showed me this band called Wall of Voodoo when I was in my mid to late teens, because I was sort of getting into listening to weirder stuff. And for those who aren't familiar with Wall of Voodoo, they're sort of like this weird new wave band from the early 80s in the similar vein of like Talking Heads, but they were definitely a lot stranger sounding and more abrasive. And the lead singer, Stan Ridgway, kind of sings in a cowboy voice. they're really weird. But I listened to them, like, briefly when I was, like, maybe 16, and I was like, I don't like this. I don't understand, like, I don't get what the music, like, it's music, but I don't like it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I don't like it. I just don't understand it. And then I came back to it maybe when I was 20. And I was like, wow, this is the best music I've ever heard. And then all I listened to for like a couple months was Wall of Voodoo.
I think your sense of taste works in the same way.
Yeah.
Where like as a child, I was a very picky eater, and there was lots of foods that I would just try and be like, nope, not for me. I can't handle that. And it wasn't until years later that I started incorporating more and more into my diet.
Yeah, I was also a really picky eater. But I think it was like a texture thing for me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But your tastes change.
Yeah, totally.
And they change. Do you think that it depends on like just having been like just being exposed to it more than one time, or
maybe, or maybe it's just your entire like worldview? Like if you actively try to change the way that your brain maybe was wired a certain way to like you know, not be as tolerant towards, you know, ways of thinking or flavors of food. Maybe if you just try actively to be like more open, like stuff like music or movies, or like you maybe are like more inclined to see something that you maybe would have really hated a couple years ago and been like, oh, actually, no, I do see why this is good.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the more time goes by, I think the easier it is for you to find value in something.
Yeah.
Because you're, like, I think it's easy to just reject something the first time you hear it. Mm-hmm. Or, like, or just push things away because they're not familiar and they're not comforting.
Right.
And it takes time to sort of, like, build up the, I guess, the, like, the courage to just keep trying new things.
Yeah. Yeah, and I definitely get, I'm, like, by no means somebody who's, like, I'm, like, a worldly music knower. Like, I don't listen to everything, obviously, because that's impossible, yeah. And I certainly don't like everything.
Yeah.
But, like, I'll try anything a couple times. But, and I definitely get stuck in, like, those ruts where, like, all I'll listen to is, like, Carly Rae Jepsen. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, like, all I have the time for and the emotional power to listen to right now is my girl CRJ.
Yeah. This, like, last week I had, like, a series of 3 days in a row where I was just listening to the same Sharon Van Etten song over
Hell yeah.
and over again.
I get in that mood too where I'll just, like, I'll get, like, really hyper focused on one song.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and I'll literally just listen to it over and over again. And sometimes I'll just go in private mode on Spotify. Some people don't know that I'm, like, listening to, like, I don't know, the same Diana Ross song over and over
right.
or something. Not because I'm embarrassed about listening to Diana Ross. I just don't want people to know that just, like, my brain is just like, I need it.
Yeah, yeah.
I need the dopamine.
Oh, I definitely would be embarrassed if anyone looked through my, like, play history and YouTube. Even.
Right,
like,
yeah. Yeah, like, yesterday, like, there's this this anime by, or it was, like, a reboot of an old anime by the animator, director, Masaki Yuasa, called, it was, like, a reboot of Devilman, and the soundtrack is, like, really good, and there's, like, this one sort of, like, this one song in the soundtrack that yesterday I just, like, listened to it, like, 10 times in a row, because I was, mm-hmm. like, it pops off so hard. And it was just, like, I didn't want any, well, now I'm saying it on the radio, because I guess I'm not that afraid, but, like, my partner knocked on the door while the room I was working in, and I was like, shut it off, he can't know that I'm listening to the Devilman soundtrack, but only one song over and over again.
Is it about the mood of the song or, like, the feeling of the song, or is it how, like, comforting it is just to hear something that you're familiar with? Like, what I'm trying to pinpoint, and I don't know myself, so but what is it about, like, listening to a track over and over again?
I don't know. I don't think there's like one. Well, I mean, obviously I like how it sounds. Mm-hmm. But often there's, like, a specific way that a melody will go that is, for whatever reason, like, extremely what I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just want to hear it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's just sort of, like, satisfying. Like, I mean, for context, I'm, like, on the autism spectrum, on the autism spectrum. And so I know a lot of other people with autism that are, like, that too, that they'll want to either, like, watch the same movie or TV show or listen to the same song over and over again, because it's just mm-hmm. like there's just, like, a inert part of your brain that's like, yeah, again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, your body, it's calling for it.
Yeah. And that sort of carries over on into, like, when I make music, because I just try to, like, make, like, loops or a, like, even a really short melody that I, like, want to listen to over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And anytime you do work on any song, like, you're gonna have to listen to it over and over
exactly,
again.
Exactly, yeah.
And, like, closely listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you didn't love that, it, like, music would be torture.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely get sick of them eventually, but, like, mm-hmm. there are, like I don't want to sound like, wow, my music's great, but, like, there are, like, a couple times where I've made, like, a melody and I'm like, ah, like I feel like cosmically, like, the universe gave me that melody, or just made it, like, a something in my brain was just like, wants to, you know, like a monkey pushing a button and receiving a treat thing. Like I just want to keep hitting the button, listening to that same like hook over and over again.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great way of describing it.
That's what's in there. It's just like a monkey in my brain hitting a button.
Yeah. And it's so funny that you can be like so satisfied by a song, but only like up to a point. Like you don't listen to the same song forever.
That is true. But then usually, even if I have some downtime, I can always come back to that song and be like, here we go again.
Yeah.
Like,
see, now I've got a running like list of tracks that I have listened to over and over again at some point in my life.
Yeah.
That just got added to the like, I want to hear this on repeat list.
Oh, I should do that, actually, because I have a lot, and just throughout time.
It makes for a really interesting list.
Yeah, I think mine would be, like, next to unlistenable, just for me personally. Just because of, like, the sort of manicness of all of them. I think a lot of songs that I end up listening to over and over again, not universally, but a lot of them are sort of chaotic sounding to begin with. So I feel like a playlist like that would just be like really stress inducing.
Right. And a lot of mine I think would be really sad songs.
Yeah, I do have a couple like that where I'm just like, yeah. Just like more like astral project into the sun kind of songs.
Yeah. Oh, well, speaking of, should we play another track?
Sure, why not? Let's do here's one that maybe will make you want to astral project into the sun. Should I explain it first, or should I just blow it?
Yeah, let's say a little bit about it.
This is by a band called Yellow Magic Orchestra. They're from Japan. They're like a really cool sort of Kraftwerk-esque band from around the same era. Do a lot of like really cool electronic music, and I love their stuff. And this one is off of the album, I believe it's called Technodelic or something, and it's the last song on the album, and it's called Epilogue, and it's really cool.
Thank you.
Oof.
Yeehaw.
What was that track? That was beautiful.
It was Epilogue by Yellow Magic Orchestra.
Mm.
Yeah. It's so haunting.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way it's sort of like these almost like industrial music sort of slamming sounds with that really spooky synth over top. I just find it really like we were talking about this like while we were listening. It just makes me feel like you're in a car in the back of your parents' car and it's raining outside and you're like a little kid listening to music and you're just like looking out the window like, ah.
Yeah, I love the back of the car time to myself.
Yeah, exactly. Just like imagining like what if Sonic the Hedgehog was running alongside the car.
Oh,
like,
we've talked about this before.
I think we have
had,
yeah,
kind of like imaginary friends that
yes.
were car specific.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely had some that were like weird, like Neopet-esque, like cat creatures or something.
One of mine, and it was only when I was in a car or on the school bus, and I would imagine a guy doing backflips at the speed of the bus.
Oh my god.
A skill saw with its like cord dangling behind it.
A what?
A skill saw, like electric saw.
That's terrifying. Like chasing the man doing backflips?
No, like they're both like a team.
Oh, okay.
They're like a dynamic duo.
That's cool.
And he wasn't scary. He was like a little cartoony dude.
Right. It's like nice.
Yeah.
They're friends.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, there they are.
Whoa. That's like an advanced, like imaginary friend situation.
I guess.
I never imagined
those two.
Wow. I never imagined any power tools. That's my friend.
But I hear like the influence of this music in your music a little bit, like not directly, but
right.
like I really like the dynamic between something that's really harsh and industrial sounding and really heavy and like really beautiful sort of delicate melodies that sort of are coexisting in a song.
Yeah, I like that a lot too. I mean, yeah, I guess if you've said it, you can hear the sort of similarities. But yeah, I find it like, I just like when a song like can be evocative of like two different contrasting emotions in me. Like obviously music is very sort of manipulative in that sense, but I like when I, because that one, I don't know, I feel sort of maybe a bit, like, melancholic, but also just, I don't know, it's just very beautiful, too.
Mm-hmm. And it does seem like it feels hopeful to me, like it's encouraging or it's, like, it's not all bad.
Yeah, it's not so bad. Yellow Magic Orchestra, it's not so bad. Yeah. And also just the fact that I appreciate songs, because not all of YMO's music is instrumental. They have a lot of songs that, like, Japanese lyrics and English lyrics. But I just like that this one, there's no talking, no speaking, no singing in it.
And is it actually, like, the epilogue to an album?
Yeah, it's the last song in the album.
Right.
Yeah.
It's got a real, like, it's almost like an overture where
yeah,
it's like
the credits.
Well, it sounds like it's kind of like wrapping everything up or like kind of encapsulating the whole tone of the whole album in some way.
And a lot of the, like, most of their albums, like, are very diverse in, like, the sounds of the individual songs. Like, they have a lot of stuff that's, like, more poppy and some stuff, like, sort of sounds like Devo and, so, like, that song is just really sticks out to me as like it doesn't sound. I don't know if they're. I mean, I haven't listened to their full catalog, but because they have quite a few albums, but that one in particular like really sticks out to me amongst all of their other songs I've heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very unique.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love. I love instrumental music. Like, I'm glad that you asked me to do this because. Yeah. Even when I listen to music with singing in it, I don't really think about it like singing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't usually listen to lyrics because I usually can't understand them in English, even if somebody's singing very clearly. Usually can't understand what's going on.
It's never the first thing that I focus on.
Yeah, I usually just like listen to it like it's another instrument, and like I listen to a lot of stuff that isn't in English too, and so that's like part of just it's like another instrument that I'm listening to that I appreciate, and like of course I like interesting lyrics, but I don't know, I really can't, I don't understand them. And like and for the longest time I also just didn't want to be lyric centric with the music that I did, so
I feel like lyrics, like just speaking words, are such a, like, they're used in our everyday life for communication, so they're quite necessary.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, when you hear a song with singing in it, where someone is singing words that you can make out, and it's hard for that not to dominate the song.
Yeah.
Because that immediately kind of comes to the forefront of your mind, like, well, oh, someone is talking to me.
Yeah.
Someone is trying to communicate something that I, in a way that I recognize immediately.
Right.
Which is partly why I kind of resent the like singing in songs sometimes, or like, or the reason I wanted to focus on instrumentals.
Right. Yeah, I think the only sort of exception, because I feel the same way, the only exception I would say for that would maybe be like rapping, because the lyrics are so integral to the rhythm of it and the function of the song itself.
Mm-hmm.
And those are usually one of the rare instances where I'm like actively like trying to listen to
the
like verses and stuff. But like apart from that, like listening to like electronic music or I don't know, anything where people aren't rapping, rap rock. So hard to listen to Rage Against the Machine because just my brain's so confused. And it's like he's yelling at me. I'm afraid.
It's intimidating. Rage Against the Machine. You're just so intimidating.
I love what you're trying to say. It's just it's so loud. Rock music is so loud. But I also like. I was thinking about this today, actually. This is kind of a different tangent, but I maybe have a little bit of resentment towards singing because I've been singing more in my in like when I do Shitlord Fuckerman, but I didn't for a long time, and maybe it would only have like one or maybe two songs per set that I would sing during. And this was before I like transitioned medically, like before I started taking testosterone. And so I was read as a woman most of the time. And I got a lot of comments of like men being like, you should sing more. You've got a great voice. You should sing more. And I that would really make me mad. And because I didn't want to, like, not because I didn't like my voice. I was fine with it, I guess. I mean, it was probably like, maybe one of the reasons why, but I just I feel like when you're read as a woman, like your contributions to music are like often read by men as being very like bodily. Like it's like, you know, if you're a singer songwriter or something and you play an instrument, you better sing too, kind of thing. Like there's like this, I feel like there's an enormous amount of pressure on women to like sing as well as play their instrument or something like that. I don't know if that makes sense, but I definitely felt like that when I was read as female a lot of the time. And I think it's really weird and unfair.
Well, what I immediately dislike about like someone coming up to you and giving you that advice is it's almost like they're assuming like, oh, hey, like, I've noticed something that could improve what you're trying to do.
I got some notes,
And, or, like, something you might not have thought about.
Right, here's what I would do better if I was Shitlord Fuckerman.
Yeah, like, saying, like, hey, you should sing more is so insulting to the idea that, like, well, like, it's your set, and clearly, like, it's something you put together and you are in control of, and you're doing it the way you want to be doing it. It's almost like they're saying, like, oh, I bet you're just, like, not, like, brave enough to say more, and if somebody gave you more positive feedback, you would.
Yeah.
Like, that's awful.
Yeah, but, like, I think the reason why, I mean, obviously, after I've transitioned, I don't get comments like that anymore, because most people read me as male, which is interesting, to say the least. But I've definitely, I definitely sing more now than I did. Like, I probably have, probably at least half and half of my set is songs that I'm singing on. Mm-hmm. But I just, like, I don't know, I feel, like, more inclined to use my voice as an instrument now, and I think I use it more as an instrument than a way to just say lyrics, I think, than I did before. I don't know, I've been thinking about it. It's weird.
since you've transitioned, are you more comfortable with how your voice sounds?
I think I'm more comfortable with how it sounds. I am very bad at controlling it, because I'm still getting used to it. It's a little bit better now, but if you asked me 6 months ago, my voice would crack all over the place. And I'm in another band where I have to do a lot more on-pitch singing and not just yelling.
Yeah.
And we had to rewrite a bunch of my parts because I, like, physically can't reach them anymore. But I do feel more comfortable with this voice. But I kind of miss being able to go really high up. Like, it's weird because there's songs that I recorded, like, a year ago that I can't sing anymore. But there's, like, this weird relic of, like, how my voice used to sound that will play in a backing track at a show. And then you'll hear my current voice over top of it, and it's kind of weird.
Right.
Like a time travel.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have, like, a voice that's closer to what you want to sound like, but also now you're working with a totally different register of, like, like, you really have to relearn or, like,
yeah, it's really hard. Yeah, it is unsettling though. I think my friend took a video of me at a Halloween party that I was playing a set at last year, and I guess I was going really aggro on my last song, and I was singing, and my voice sounded like, I was like, who is that that scary man who, like, took control of my body and is speaking through me? It was like, it sounded super, like, low and gravelly. It was like, I was like, wow, it's Motorhead too. Actually, my friend Rob, who saw me at me play it, the last show I played, was like, said that my voice sounded like Glenn Danzig a bit, which I thought was really funny.
But
I think that's all a nice comparison, but also really funny.
Yeah.
I like the idea of me having, like, Danzig hair and being, like, really, like, beefy like Danzig.
Yeah, that is something I've known about you for a while.
Yeah, I'm built like Danzig. You know that.
Yeah, the listeners don't have the benefit of seeing your beefy bod.
Yeah, it's huge. Definitely not 5'5" and, like, 120 pounds.
Definitely.
Definitely not. Definitely more than that. We have fun here.
Yeah, we do. Oh, thank you so much for coming, girl.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm going to have to wrap it up.
Yeah, I that's too bad I couldn't have played a little bit more music, but that's okay. We were blabbing.
And Nitu is determined to do at least one more show with
me.
So maybe we'll get you both back again.
Sure, if she'll have me, I'd love to. Yeah. I had some records I was going to play today, but unfortunately the record player isn't working, which is too bad. Yeah. But I want to apologize for not playing any